All right, I think we might be ready to get it to work here. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the September 18th meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll, Carla?
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Hales?
Here. We're going to start this morning's work with a presentation. There are a lot of threats to the public health and the individual health of our citizens, and one of them is ovarian cancer. And we have some activists in our community that have worked very hard on awareness and treatment and research on that deadly disease. And I want to invite Diane O'Connor and anyone else who's here with you, Diane, to come up and speak to us about this morning. And we also have a proclamation to read. So maybe I'll start by reading the proclamation and then invite you up to follow up. It says, whereas ovarian cancer is the fifth leading cause of cancer deaths among women in the United States, and whereas when detected early, over 90% of women survive ovarian cancer, but many women will be diagnosed in the late stages of the disease due to lack of awareness of the symptoms and lack of a screening test. And whereas ovarian cancer has symptoms even in its early stages, and women should contact their healthcare professional if these symptoms are present, if they're new or unusual, if they persist for more than a few weeks, symptoms like pelvic and abdominal pain, increased abdominal size, bloating, loss of appetite, feeling full quickly. So people who feel these symptoms should contact their doctor and make sure they're okay. And whereas Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month helps increase awareness about the signs and symptoms of ovarian cancer and spotlights the need for continued research to improve prevention, early detection, treatment, and possible cure. Now, therefore, I, Charlie Hales, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim September 2013 to be Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month in Portland and encourage all residents to observe this month and to watch for those symptoms. So thank you for being here. Come on up and tell us more about what's going on in the national effort that you're leading.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, actually, sit there so that way you're on camera. So you have to sit facing us because then you're on the camera. So counterintuitive it is. There's a lot that we do around here.
Yes, counterintuitive. We are counterintuitive.
Oh, thank you. Good morning. You'll notice that a lot of us are dressed in teal today, and your fine mayor has a teal ribbon on, and that is the color of ovarian cancer. Those of us in the audience are either survivors of ovarian cancer, including myself, or family and friends, or researchers. So traditionally, September has been declared Ovarian Cancer National Awareness Month by the President of the United States, including President Obama, whose mother died of ovarian cancer. And I would also like to add that Mayor Hale's lovely wife, Nancy's mother, also passed away from ovarian cancer. So it's near and dear to their hearts as well. As the mayor mentioned, we look upon September as the month to educate women about ovarian cancer and the symptoms. We don't have a screening test. We don't have a mammogram. We don't have colonoscopies. And a lot of women think a pap smear takes care of that, but it doesn't. That's only for cervical cancer. So it's of utmost importance that all women are aware of these symptoms and listen to their bodies. And by the way, 90% of women have symptoms when they're diagnosed. It is not a silent disease. So we'll hope also that you will notice the Morrison Bridge tomorrow night, courtesy of the Willamette Light Brigade. It will be lit up in teal tomorrow night to honor Ovarian Cancer National Awareness Month. And we'd especially like to thank our mayor. Actually, he's your mayor. I live in Vancouver. for his commitment to the City of Roses. And we'd like him to accept a teal rose to add to his collection. And thank you for your proclamation and your dedication to our cause. Thank you.
Thank you, Diane. Well, Diane, thank you and all of your fellow activists for the work that you put into this issue. I think people who take on a national cause like this from personal experience and passion can really make a difference. And actually, I had coffee yesterday with the president of OHSU, and you know, we have an amazing research organization here in Portland that's made a lot of progress in cancers of one type or another. And so I think the fact that you continue to help raise awareness about this disease, about the symptoms, you know, is one more part of, I hope, a successful effort both medically and in the community to make people aware and make people well. So thanks for everything that you're doing. Thanks for being here this morning. We'll wear it with pride and look forward to the lights tomorrow. Thanks for coming. All right, we'll move on to the regular agenda, and we have some folks signed up to testify on communications this morning.
Item 871, request of Lightning to address council regarding homelessness.
Lightning, you here? There he is. Good morning. Morning.
Good morning. My name is Lightning. When it comes to reducing homelessness, the harsh reality is one plan just simply does not fit all. Creating a mutual understanding between all parties is essential for reducing homelessness. Creating a balance between the homeless community and the business community is a very complex issue. As we have all seen by the media attention, the current situation in front of City Hall is a great example of just how complex the situation can really be. We must first have a complete understanding from each homeless person where they possibly would like to move. This is imperative to gain cooperation from all parties to ensure things run smoothly. Again, one plan simply does not fit all. Some may desire to move to a shelter, apartment, home, or hotel, or ultimately long-term permanent housing. Mayor Charlie Hales has offered financial assistance to numerous nonprofits with the intent of reducing homelessness. Getting the homeless to relocate from the sidewalks and into some form of housing is a great solution for reducing homelessness. In my opinion, I feel some of the nonprofits have not stepped up in assisting the mayor to ensure a smooth transition from the sidewalks into housing for the homeless in front of City Hall. I would like to see more sidewalk street outreach by the nonprofits, more face-to-face, and gaining an understanding where the homeless would like to move and get them into some form of housing. Portland Business Alliance. It's interesting your name is often recognized and associated with the homeless by the media. Although the media tends to portray you in a negative manner toward the homeless, which definitely is not to anyone's advantage. In my opinion, Portland Business Alliance should be recognized for improving the lives of the homeless, which in turn will improve the businesses throughout the city and ultimately improve the city as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. 872, please.
Request of Namkeisha O. Rope to address council regarding having another law considered.
Namkeisha, you here? No? Okay, we'll see if they get here in time for the end of this. So 873.
Request of Mary Eng to address council regarding traumatic brain injury, vision impairment, and Portland police brutality.
Mary, are you here? Okay, she comes later. 874.
Request of Benjamin Pickering to address council regarding take time to make time.
Pickering, is he here? Okay. And then 875.
Request of Norm Santana to address council regarding covering Mount Tabor reservoirs.
Santana? Oh, there he is. Nope. All right. We'll see if those folks sign up for another day. Now, let's move to consent calendar. I don't believe there have been any requests to remove items from the consent calendar. None here. Okay, then let's take a vote on the consent calendar, please.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. And time certain, 876.
Accept the report of the Chief Administrative Officer for the quarterly report of the Technology Oversight Committee.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning. My name is Abby Kopic, and I work on the communications team for the Office of Management and Finance. and I provide staff support to the Technology Oversight Committee, which we commonly refer to as the TOC. The Technology Oversight Committee is made up of five citizen members: Colleen Gadbois, Ken Neubauer, Joshua Mitchell, Wilfred Pinfold, and Doretta Schrock. Unfortunately, all of the TOC members had other work commitments today, so none of them could join us for this presentation. I'm going to provide a brief summary of the administrative updates for this quarter, and then I'm going to turn it over to Ben Berry, the Chief Technology Officer, for the project updates. As brief background, the Technology Oversight Committee was established by the city in the spring of 2011. It is an independent five-member citizen advisory committee that reviews selected City of Portland technology projects. Projects may be selected for TOC review based on the size of the project budget, potential risks, impact to city operations, or community interest. There is a formal intake assessment that both bureau directors and the chief technology officer independently complete that determines whether a project is overseen by the TOC. The TOC's charge as an advisory body is to focus on whether projects are completed on time, within budget, and within the project scope. The quarterly report that we are reviewing today covers committee activity from May to July 2013. In terms of the administrative updates, the TOC continues to look at methods for identifying problems early and raising the flag when needed. After the last City Council meeting and the discussion about the city's contracting process, the TOC met with the city's chief procurement officer in May to learn more about how technology contracting is conducted at the city. This resulted in a letter of recommendations to the chief administrative officer and City Council that outlined opportunities to improve technology contracting. One of the TOC's recommendations was to create a contract risk assessment tool that makes it easy for the TOC members to see what provisions are included in any contract that is overseen by the TOC. This tool was created this summer and is beginning to be implemented. New projects that join the portfolio for TOC oversight this quarter include the Office 365 implementation, sponsored by the Bureau of Technology Services, the City Risk Information Solution Connection, sponsored by the Bureau of Internal Business Services, and the Procurement Solicitation System, also sponsored by the Bureau of Internal Business Services. There was one project that submitted TOC intake documents and was determined not to warrant TOC oversight, which was a project for construction project management software, sponsored by the Bureau of Environmental Services. Before we move on to the project updates, did you have any questions about any of the administrative activities? Great. Well, I'd like to turn it over to Ben Berry for the project updates.
Thank you, Abby. Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. I'm going to deliver the Technology Oversight Committee. My name is Ben Berry. I'm the Chief Technology Officer for the City of Portland. I'll be covering seven projects this morning. The TOC is currently overseeing seven projects in their portfolio. Only one project, the BTS Enterprise Technology Refresh, is truly in the green. All the others are mostly yellow, with a few areas that are trending in the red. The first one for review is the Information Technology Advancement Project for ITAP. This is with the Bureau of Development Services. The project is meeting expectations in its current phase, but the TOC continues to monitor their initial concerns regarding timeline and total cost. During this reporting period, the QA felt good about the project's progress in contract negotiations, but the TOC rated everything yellow to stay vigilant to potential unknown risks or conditions that may not have surfaced yet. We know that in August, the TOC meeting, that both the QA and TOC were increasingly concerned about both timeline and budget. Reds were starting to show up in the overall assessment. Pushing for a detailed project plan, QA has pushed for a detailed project plan, which will, in fact, allow us to have that plan before the end of December of this year. The estimated overall cost for the project have increased slightly from $11.2 million to $11.8 million since the last quarter report, reflecting the cost of hiring a professional project manager and an additional part-time subject matter expert. Now, what I'm going to also do is give the summary of the critical path chart. For QA, it was red for schedule. It was also red for TOC in August. So we're beginning to bring forth beyond just July quarterly report. We're bringing in the most recent into August as well. The budget is going yellow for QA and yellow for TOC, and the scope is going yellow for QA and also TOC.
And Ben, refresh us, I think, and also for anybody that's listening, what are those red, yellow, green ratings from either the TOC or the QA?
The red means intervention is required by the team and the bureau director. Yellow is to be aware there are issues that should be looked at. And green, everything is fine.
So red means intervention required. Serious concerns. Don't wait to let this develop further.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
And so, Ben, you said for the ITAP project, we see yellows for June and July, but you're saying for August we don't have August here, but you're saying in August.
Let's see.
Went to red?
For the most recent score, the TOC is showing for ITAP red for schedule, yellow for budget, yellow for scope.
I would also interject that we just got the September QA reports, and that's actually trending back to yellow.
Because we took action on the ITAP project at the Development Services and agreed that the timeline would be extended. However, since it's a maximum price contract, the cost doesn't increase.
And you'll tend to see on long-lasting projects some movement up and down. The critical piece is as we get toward the end of the project, we've got to stay in that green area for meeting those deliverable dates. Next project is the Water Bureau from Water Bureau and Revenue Bureau's monthly billing statements for water. Despite earlier delays with the vendor, the TOC feels that project is more stable and on a track for a cutover October 2013. Both the timeline and budget metrics are trending up this quarter. The meeting with Kayenta, the vendor, and its leadership earlier this spring was a turning point for this project. Kayenta has been able to fix issues as they arise now. They are scheduled for a go-live October 4th billing cycle.
Ben, just a comment. The mayor and I have been engaging our local utilities to get some advice as to how we might manage our utilities better.
Yes.
And we've received some interesting feedback about concepts like benchmarking and how you might do it. We've also had some feedback about our billing system and some lessons that they've learned. It might be, I think, valuable to arrange a meeting with the folks that we're dealing with. That's the leadership of the utilities that are directly engaged in these issues, with your committee, to bounce some ideas off. But they're being enormously helpful to us in thinking anew about how we manage our utilities, and I think we may want to bring them to the table to get some advice on these issues.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'll do a follow-up with you after this to get the contact information.
Thank you. Thank you. I'd like to join you at that meeting.
Thank you.
Great.
On the critical score pad for this, the QA is no longer with the project, as we have reported in the past. TLC's report for July was yellow for schedule, yellow for budget, and green for scope. However, in the latest meeting that we have had just recently, those indicators are all trending in the green at this point for the cutover in October. Next project, Enterprise Network Technology Refresh. Project is meeting expectations. The project is on schedule and under budget. The majority of the project is a routine migration with the most risk in the early phases of the project, such as building the core and the city's server migrations. The TOC agreed to provide oversight for the first three milestones, which are all mostly complete at this point. They're all showing green for both QA and TOC. Affordable housing software is the next project with the Portland Housing Bureau. The TOC has concerns with lingering delays on this project. The original timeline was for October 2012, nearly a year ago. Their schedule for the September 1st cutover was missed again. The TLC has a low confidence in this deadline, given the project's history. With the vendor HDS having glitches in their software, the cutover has just recently been delayed once again. If the project continues to delay, the old system, MIDAS, which is out of the Portland Development Commission, becomes unsupportable in December of 2013, which uses the old Windows XP operating system. The QA contract was completed back in December 2012 when the project was expected to finish. The TOC has recommended re-engaging the QA firm, especially for the post-implementation review. And most recently, we have had a letter constructed that will come out from the city attorney's office now, reminding the vendor of its requirements for this project and asking for completion of the work. Questions on that one? The score pad for this one, both QA and TOC show red in schedule. Both QA and TOC show yellow and yellow for budget, and the scope was yellow and yellow for QA and TOC. Now, we have had a more recent update from the TOC. I believe they're red for schedule. Let me just do one more checking here for the housing. Yes, red for schedule, yellow for budget, and green for scope. That's the most recent one as of August.
So, Ben, what is it your office that will reengage a quality insurance consultant for this project?
It's actually the Bureau that is reengaging that QA vendor, and they have made strides to do so.
So that's in process then?
Yes.
Their plan is actually to get QA on board in October.
Next project is the City Risk Information Systems connection. It's called RISC, R-I-S-C. This is with the Bureau of Internal Business Services. The TOC is concerned about the project timeline and the impact of delays. The September 2013 deadline is not going to be met, and it seems like the revised December 2013 timeline still has low confidence in being met by the project team. Project is working on completion of four SAP interfaces. Both the Enterprise Business Solutions Group and the Bureau of Technology Services staff resources are currently under heavy workload and with competing demands. The interface functionality and development is taking longer than planned. If the project is not completed by the end of 2013, a large expense could be incurred to support the current RISC system of Windows Operating System XP computers, which is being driven by the Office 365 project. As you may know, we are to be off of the older operating XP operating system by December 31st. If we're not off by bureaus, then they will not be able to connect their PCs to the enterprise network because there's no longer virus patches coming from Microsoft for XP. Therefore, they'll have to have two PCs on the desk, one for an XP box that's not connected to the enterprise network, the other with a Windows 7, which is connected, adding the extra cost. During the quarter, TLC rated the timeline as red, but the budget is now also seeing red in most recent August report. The more delays, the more staff time is being spent on this project, including costs for the outside project manager. The last QA report on this that was just received was red for schedule, red for budget, and yellow for scope. It's too early for the TLC. TOC concurred with those scores in the most recent meeting that we had this week. Questions on the RISC project?
So the if I'm reading the color-coded chart right, the confidence level in this project has gone from high to low?
Very much so.
And that is
due to not being able to make their first cutover, and we're not thinking that they're going to make their second one based on schedule. I believe the requirements of this project were defined initially, but as they got into more development of the effort, those requirements grew to the point where they had to send requirements to their vendor for development. And now the vendor who's developing the application is kind of backed up with all these requirements that took so long to evolve. And so that's why they're thinking that they're going to miss that. They're targeted to make the December date, but TOC believes they'll miss it.
So are we imposing, I don't know if imposing is the right word, but are we asking requirements of the software that are not what the software is sort of off-the-shelf designed to do? Is that part of the problem?
Well, this is a cloud-based application that is being developed on behalf of the city, but it's also being used by other customers.
Right.
So that's the dilemma you get into. Certain requirements that we already had defined and then been redefined, the vendor is having to take that into consideration as they develop. And so because it took so long to get some of these requirements to the vendor, they are saying they're backed up to get back the code for the new system. And so it's kind of a two-way cause and effect on this particular application, Commissioner.
And so the current timeline for the cutover at the end of the current calendar year?
The current target is December 16th. But there's low, we don't think they're going to make that date.
And what happens?
Which could go into January, and then that will impose that 2 PC on the desk scenario until they deliver the new system for just the Windows 7 operating system.
So we're at risk for that in two cases, for the
yes.
Windows cutover date.
Well, the city will make its Windows 7 cutover date,
yes.
But this particular bureau may end up having two devices on their desk until resolution of the application. Procurement solicitation system. This is with the Bureau of Internal Business Services. This project is currently meeting expectations. The TOC has not discussed the project beyond its initial project introduction. The TOC will more closely monitor the project once it finishes the process mapping phase and enters the system solicitation and implementation phase. This is a brand new project that the TOC will just be overseeing. That is the report for today. It encompasses May through July, but we're attempting to bring in additional information, not holding just to the quarter report, but as we see things in August, we see things in September, we'll give you more information just like we did today. That's going to be a strategy going forward. We'd rather you have the most just-in-time information in which to hear the report.
So further questions for Ben or Abby?
Yeah. So when I met with you, you showed me a one-page document that I guess maybe that's what you're referring to, Abby, is the risk assessment tool, the series of questions that all that should be answered, and the commissioner in charge should know those questions have been answered or be prepared to explain why they're not answered.
Yeah.
I guess my request would be that risk assessment tool will also be part of any council document that comes to us for approval of a contract so that we see the risk assessment tool, and we understand if things are being waived, and we can ask why, if those are. So that is my request.
Yes, we can certainly do that, Commissioner.
Right now, this is only being used for TOC projects, so for these 7 projects that are under the TOC. It might be a larger question if you want that to be for other technology projects.
Why not? I think it's a good suggestion. Why not have the same questions asked, regardless of scope or size? I mean,
where there are IT contracts.
Yeah, so I mean.
Right. At what stage would that be present? Before it's bid or when we decide to do the project?
When we designed this, it was with the intent of during contract negotiations. And this was more just for the TOC purposes to really, when you're reading through the contract, it's so big and convoluted, and they didn't have time to really easily assess what's actually in here in terms of vendor and accountability and protections. So this was kind of a little cheat sheet that helped the TOC and the Bureau Director really see this is what's in this contract.
Contracts come to council, so it could come then.
But sometimes we authorize procurement to actually decide and execute the contract. Do they then come back to us after they've made that choice?
Well, I think if we're referring to this forum, this is one of the initial forums we'll work with the Bureau and making sure that they have an answer, yes or no, on some of these contract requirements. We can, if there's no's on the form, we would plan to meet with the Bureau project team or director, and we could also give you the updates as a part of projects that we report on from a TLC basis that have the form. But I'm also hearing that you want this form for any IT contract that the city is undergoing. Is that the case?
A good idea. If it's practicable, I think it's a good idea.
As we approve a contract.
As you approve a contract.
Well, as we consider it. No later than that, I would say.
Okay, so what we can do is go back and talk with the chief procurement officer who would be presenting those contracts. and see what the approach and protocol strategy would be for that. Okay.
Sounds good.
Good. Other questions for the team? And is there anyone else signed up on this, Carl?
Yes, okay. We have three people signed up.
Actually, Mr. Mayor, may I ask one question?
Sure, sure.
Ben, on the RISC project, I noted you said that EBS and BTS staff resources working on the SAP interfaces are currently under a heavy workload with commuting demands. And then you say if this project is not completed by the end of 2013, we could incur significant costs. I mean, I just want to make sure that you have the ability to allocate staff resources in such a way as to minimize our exposure to additional costs, that if you have competing demands on your staff, you have the ability to shift them around in the most advantageous way.
Commissioner Novick, this is always a balancing act when you've got competing projects and resources that are responding to those projects. I did talk to the project manager this morning, EBS manager, Rick Schulte, this morning. He did tell me he had about 3 weeks between now and the next 3 weeks in which to actually do work on the risk project should the vendor supply them with code. So that's going to help us. Anytime we have windows of opportunity like that, we will certainly apply them. And Rick's team is the one that's responsible for working with the vendor on this kind of constraint around the hours. So we do have that luxury of a three-week window in which to get work done prior to that December 16th cutover date that's been planned.
I also just want to say that generally speaking, if you find that a lack of staff resources is costing us more money than we were saving by having fewer staff, then that's something that we should know, and please keep us apprised of that.
Well, I can do that. Thank you.
Other questions for Ben or Abby? Thanks very much. Let's call public testimony again. Remember that we want testimony on this item. So if you're signed up to testify on this item, it's about the technology report.
Those three people were Ivan Scarborough, Charles Johnson, and Joe Walsh.
Morning. Sure, come on up. About this subject. Not about any subject, but about this particular report. That's the way it works.
But about nothing else. I was also told you could talk about whatever you wanted here.
But that's for what we just did at the front end of the council session.
So you have
to sign up in advance for that.
Well, I have an issue that's like so so pertinent, like so pressing, I couldn't wait till next week.
Then you should come up to my office and talk to my staff, but don't try to inject that, please, into the discussion of these particular items because we got to get through this list.
Okay. Well, thanks. I can tell you what I have to say about the technology thing is just that
put your name in the record first.
My name is Ivan Scarborough, and I recently learned that I guess the World Health Organization admitted to the public, I think in 2011, that Wi-Fi causes DNA damage that will affect our great 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 grandchildren. I have to say, you know, the technology review boards take that into consideration. Mm-hmm. Think about perhaps moving it from the schools and whatnot, cell phones as well. And the other thing I have to say about that is just that a lot of problems and, like, meetings and wasted time and energy could be saved if you guys switched over to Linux as opposed to continuing to deal with Windows, which is probably, like, you know, a money thing with Microsoft or whatever. But Linux is, like, so much simpler. There's no updating or any kind of weirdness. You know, it's just straight out. So on that subject, that's all I have to say. So okay. Blessings on the
great. Thank you. Thanks very much. Tony Charles. Oh, go ahead.
You want to go first? My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. We're going to take the position and ask you to refuse to accept this report based on this concept. The report is very complex. As we were sitting there, we were trying to follow it, and it seems to me that there would be an easier way to do this if on the screen you had slides showing what you guys are looking at in the report. So when you start talking about yellows and reds and oranges, everybody gets confused. And then you start throwing in figures and different departments. Nobody knows what you're talking about. Now, we are activists, and we have some ability to look this stuff up. So we don't come totally unprepared. But I have to tell you, in the middle of the presentation, I was totally confused. So I'm asking you to tell your staff to go back and do something to raise your grade level from just above F in transparency. Okay. And the way you could do that is when someone presents something, they have slides like private industry does all the time. They don't come here unprepared. As far as I'm concerned, this administrative officer came to you unprepared because he just gave you a lot of gobbledygook. And you sat there and looked at the report and said, oh, okay. The people at home that are watching this and the people in this audience, and I asked a couple of them, you understand what this guy is saying? And they said, no. And I didn't understand it either. And I think I'm a little bit more advised on what's going on with the city council than most people. And if I don't get it, you got a problem. And that's what I'm saying to you. You have to go back to your staff and say, you have to present a report that when you finish, everybody says, I understand that. I may not agree with it, but at least I know what they're talking about. Thank you.
Thanks. Good morning, Charles.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. My name is Charles Johnson. There is, of course, a linked PDF for this item 876, and it does look like gobbledygook, but I think that even Mr. Berry would agree that the professionalism of the technology office would be better if he'd had time to bring along a PowerPoint and to put some of these graphics up for the public to see on the larger monitor. 3 minutes isn't really enough for a comprehensive response. Two things I think we wanted to look at is, one of the projects is talking about moving to famous magic geek buzzword of the day, cloud-based services. Cloud-based services are services you can't get to when your connection fails. Right now, I don't know where RFISC RISC is hosted, but one thing that I'll be following up with Mr. Berry is that the city wants to know that its connection uptime is related to cost-covering incentives. If a line is cut or there's a connection failure, you either want to get to pay less to whoever your service provider is, or you want them to cover the expense of an interim connection. The slight increase on the 11, I think it was like 11.3 million to 11.8 million. Part of that was hiring a project manager. I know that was a complex decision. That was sort of the discovery of the fact that, oops, we didn't have a project manager in time, so now to get things back under control, we are going to hire who we should have hired before. I think instead of going into all seven of these, we also have the sad situation of what project has the worst track record? Can you remember out of the seven? I will remind you, it is the Affordable Housing Project with the Portland Housing Bureau. What a coincidence, and what that says about the priorities of the city of Portland. I'll also be talking to the new housing commissioner. I do want to thank the Office of Technology Services because even though they didn't do two-sided printing, not two-sided printing, a small issue, they did get me the list of the neighborhood people for the Pearl District, so that we know that along with Patricia Gardner, pattyg57@gmail.com, we'll be dealing with Yasmin Farood, Bruce Morrison, and Bob Gersberger, and Bill Dolan on some other issues. Thanks for your time, gentlemen and lady.
Thank you very much. All right. Anyone else signed up?
That's all who signed up.
Oh, okay. I would like to. On this item? Okay, come on up.
Hello, commissioners. My name is Crystal Linsky, and I represent 10,000 people, citizens, and people interested in what goes on in our city hall. The whole time that last agenda item was going on, I was thinking, this is the video I'm going to send to all my friends and family around the world as the epitome of what goes on. And I applaud you for asking questions and looking into it. I don't want to take up the time that we need to start working on this issue. So, I'm really put off when I ask direct questions of my representatives and offices here in City Hall, and I get back garbledygook, whether it's in the council chambers or in a letter from your staff people or even in a silly little put-off session. I feel like you're not being open. Not just you, but these offices, we're not communicating and our city is falling apart. We need to fix the infrastructure. We need to get the services. We need to think about the future generations. And we're just working for profits all the time, which obviously aren't working because we're losing money as we fail on, you know. Yeah. Well, again, thank you, and have a good day.
Thank you for sharing. Gracious good morning out there in TV land. This is Veronica. I used to work at Channel 7 for Roland Galley and his old group. So you know where we're coming from. Anyway, I just wanted to let you know that was then. This is now. Okay, Portland is different than any other city. It's very different, and there's two rivers running through it, which make it a real, real, real nice island. I call it an island in the sun. It's beautiful. We have more technology here than anyone could see, and the police technology is on the top, the cutting edge of all the cities that I can think of. They really are smart. There's just one tiny little problem out there with regard to what we're talking about here. I have great fears that at some point in time we're going to have a power failure here that's going to blow the circuits everywhere, and without that power, if we have big grid failure, we're going to be in deep trouble. The people who can think on their feet will survive. And this is no joke. It's happened before in the 60s and the 70s. And if you were in New York during the blackout, you know that that's 9 months later, there was a lot of babies born. And anyway, you understand what I'm saying. We cannot do a failure analysis of a project that is not finished. There's many on the burner now, and they're all worthy. And if they were funded by the city, I'm sure they're fine. The point of the matter is, once it gets going, watch it. At my school, Portland State, they have removed a huge chunk of Lincoln Hall. We were set to do a little light comedy Well, it's a musical. It's a little light musical. It's West Side Story. It's been done before, and I can sing the lead to it, but I probably wouldn't. But that's what we were scheduled to do. Now there's a big chunk, and then they've glitched us again. There's no way to get around it. But anyway, this has absolutely nothing to do with what you're talking about. But I wanted to put something in the works about it. We all love Lincoln. We sang there. I sang Fauré's Requiem, and during the Dona Nobis, everybody kind of went up and out a little bit. But, you know, everything is worthwhile in the city. We have to preserve it. Work to preserve it every day. It means taking walks in the city and finding out. It's the people-to-people connection that does it. Thank you.
Veronica, can I just respond to one thing you said?
Right.
Because you raised a wonderful point about what happens if there's a blackout with our technology.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I just wanted to tell you that in I'm the new Water Bureau commissioner, so recently
good.
I went to a secure site to look at our operations center.
Bull Run,
so,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the center that has the computers that run the entire system. So it has everything.
And wonderful.
It's a technological marvel. But I asked the same question. I said, what happens if there's a power interruption?
Yeah, or an earthquake.
Or an earthquake.
Are we prepared for a huge disaster?
So, number one, we're in a building that's earthquake-proof to the highest standards. Number two, we have a backup generator. And I say, what if the generator fails? Number three, they have a battery set up, so the thing is actually always running on batteries. So if there is no such thing on this system as an interruption of power because we run a battery backup simultaneously with the power, and we have a backup generator. Now, that I'm sure there's levels of redundancies we still have to consider.
And duplication.
That's
right.
A great question, though, because you think if
well, I worry about fire hazards too.
So
yeah.
It turns out
earthquakes, fires, and floods, total disasters.
Shape on some of these, then.
But you are right. You are right. And at the same time, natural disasters always happen. It's not the people from up making the problem. It's the people down here that are shaking things up and doing substandard work. And that's why we have the Better Business Bureau here. And that's why we have the Board of Permit Appeals. I found a house out there in my walk. that is divided evenly and what a rather wonderful invention right down the middle. And the bathroom's here, and there's a little couch on the right side, and on the left side is the other side of the flat. No worker's permit, nothing. The guy didn't bother to file a permit because he doesn't speak English enough, and so, now isn't that interesting? Exposed beams and everything. So stuff happens. We have to be on, have our guards up, go around the blocks and look at them, and we like the technology. We love Intel. They're on the cutting edge. But we don't want to do a failure analysis of the system without looking at it a little bit better. Okay?
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Further council discussion? Any further questions? Then a motion to accept the report.
Motion to accept the report.
Second.
Second.
And a roll call.
Saltzman?
Well, excuse me. I want to thank, first of all, the five citizens who comprise the Technology Oversight Committee for the hard work they do. And the purpose of the Technology Oversight Committee and the quarterly report to council is to provide the members of the council and the public transparency about where we are, and transparency and honesty about where we are with information technology projects, which can often, as I've said in the past, they can often come back to bite us. And this is a way to prevent that from happening. And so I appreciate the committee's report and the staff's report, and look forward to having that risk assessment tool, any questions raised by that, accompanying future contract documents at a minimum. We could see them sooner, but no later than when council has to approve them. And I do agree with Mr. Walsh. I think our future presentations should have a PowerPoint so that the public who's here and hasn't looked at the agenda ahead of time can see the color coding and the concerns on the screen at the same time this is being presented. So I think that's a good idea. Thank you again. Please to vote aye.
Novick.
I also want to thank the members of the Technology Oversight Committee and to thank Ben for what I thought was a very clear, although in some cases worrisome, presentation. And I just want to to the extent that the failures of contractors are going to cost us money, I hope that the city attorney is prepared to go after them for recompense. To the extent that our limited, the fact that we have competing demands on staff are causing problems, I want us to keep track of that and make sure that as we go into the next budget process, we take that into account and see if there are areas where we need to shore you up. So again, thank you for what I actually thought was a very clear, although sometimes disturbing report, and I vote aye.
Fritz.
Well, thank you both for the briefing in my office and for the presentation today. I agree that the purpose of having this presentation is to expand the knowledge of the citizenry and to make things clearer and more open and transparent. So having more of the visual presentation that we were provided would obviously support that goal. The important thing, though, is that there's these five citizens who are delving into this on a regular basis, getting all of the information and doing the analysis for the general public as well as for the council with that independent oversight. And I particularly thank Doretta Schrock, who is my assigned person on that committee. We had a citizen committee oversight for the computer implementation at the Bureau of Emergency Communications before Commissioner Saltzman was the great impetus for forming this committee, and it was enormously helpful in tracking. I'm finding the reports very helpful with the information technology program at the Bureau of Development Services, and so was pleased to see the analysis on that. Moving the implementation date out a little bit also has the advantage of implementing it at the slowest time of the season, of the construction season, rather than at the beginning, at the height of it, so that has multiple benefits. It does require the staff to be working on the project for longer, so the internal costs are higher. But as I mentioned, the cost of the contract with the external party will not be going up. So I will continue to be monitoring these and getting the reports on a monthly basis, and I appreciate knowing that there's so many eyes on these projects, because frankly, I'm not an expert in technology, and I'm glad to know that there are citizens and staff who are tracking and then giving me the report. Thank you very much. Aye.
Ish.
Well, I too want to thank staff for an excellent job. Just three quick points. In addition to a PowerPoint, I hope we also have a paper product to hand out. Some of us with eyes that are declining don't work as well with PowerPoints, and it's easier just to have something in hand. So I would hope that people would have the option. Second, this technology oversight process represents a sea change from how we've dealt with technology even during my 5 years. So I want to thank Dan again for having the idea, and I think the leadership turnover in the last year really vindicates why we're doing this. Dan is the third housing commissioner since January 1st. I'm the fourth Water Bureau commissioner in charge since Thanksgiving. That's a lot of change in leadership, and it makes it even more difficult to manage complex technology projects when you have that much turnover at the leadership level. So I think it further vindicates the rationale for doing this, to make sure that we have a consistent process of providing oversight regardless of who's the director or the commissioner in charge. So it falls to the council to monitor technology and protect taxpayers. So again, Dan, this was a very good idea, and I think it continues to bear fruit. And as much heartburn as these reports give us from time to time, to me, that's an example of how we are being transparent and not sugarcoating the problems that are coming up. So thank you all for good work. Aye.
Hales.
Yeah, thank you, Ben and Abby. This is important oversight that you're providing, and that these citizens, I suspect, are putting in a little more time than they might have thought they were committing. But we appreciate them very much. My appointee, for example, is Dr. Wilfred Penfold, who has one of the coolest titles I've heard, which is Director of Extreme Scale Programs at Intel. That just sounds like somebody who knows what she's doing, and she does. And I'm very happy that she and these other citizens have volunteered. So we'll continue to make this process more visible and more understandable, because part of the purpose of this is for the public to see what's going on, and for us as commissioners in charge to know what's going on in our own bureau's projects. This is serious stuff. Just looking at this list, we've got about $15 million at risk in these projects that are now being monitored. That's a serious amount of money, and although the city of Portland has overall a great track record in terms of bringing projects in on time and on budget, whether it's the renovation of a fire station or construction of a park or the biggest public works project in the history of the city, the Big Pipe, nevertheless, there's always the opportunity in any complex project for things to get off on schedule and scope and budget. So that's why those three elements are so carefully watched by this process. Very helpful. We'll just keep improving it as we go along. Thank you. Aye. All right, to the regular calendar then, please.
Did you want those first two read together?
Do you, Steve?
Let's see.
No. The first one is...
No, the flexible funds probably by itself, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry. I was confused. Sorry. Yeah, the next two read together. This one is a standalone.
Thanks. 887, nominate six projects for fiscal year 2016-18 regional flexible funds and one project for the Regional Economic Opportunity Fund.
So I'm trying to figure out how to explain a process that involves lots of initials. Metro Council and JPACT are prepared to give us a bunch of money, and we're coming to you with a list of projects that we ask you to agree are the projects we should ask Metro and JPACT to fund. Six of these projects we're asking them to fund under the rubric of regional flexible funds. Another project we ask you to approve our submittal for the Regional Economic Opportunity Fund process. Today's vote will be the culmination of a year of community involvement that identified seven projects that will make our streets safer, provide access to transit, accommodate the efficient delivery of goods. And the projects were identified based on priorities identified in the Regional Transportation Plan, the East Portland in Motion 5-year Implementation Strategy for Active Transportation, and the Freight, Pedestrian, and Bicycle Master Plans. And the projects nominated fall into three categories, Regional Economic Opportunity Funds, Active Transportation, and Green Economy and Freight. The Regional Economic Opportunity Fund, again, was newly created, and this fund will prioritize transportation investments that will result in economic development. And Portland has prioritized the use of these funds in East Portland because of the incomplete transportation system and barriers to economic development in that area. The area is served by the East Portland Access to Employment and Education Multimodal Project Grant. If you agree, we should submit that to JPEG to Metro. The area served accounts for 37% of Portland children, 33% of Portland seniors, and neighborhoods with poverty rates as high as 36%. And these improvements will primarily serve the David Douglas School District, where 79% of students receive free or reduced lunches. Council approval of the $9 million East Portland Emotion Project will bring the total committed or built in East Portland to $47 million since the adoption of the East Portland in Motion strategy. The projects identified for active transportation funding at a regional flexible funds focus on creating infrastructure in parts of Portland that currently lack these basic services. The Barber and Foster projects are on existing high crash corridors. Over the years, we've created plans to improve the safety and function of Barber and Foster. This grant funding allows us to implement would allow us to implement the necessary projects to enhance safety and ensure that these major roads serve as economic engines for our city. The Central City Multimodal Safety Project would be a project which provide planning and implementation funding to help address 14 of the top 20 high crash intersections for bicycling and 6 of the top 20 high crash intersections for walking in our city. Not only do we need to address these safety concerns, but this project will also meaningfully address the public concern that accessing downtown is limited due to unnecessary conflicts between people walking, bicycling, driving, or taking transit. One of these projects will provide funding for developing a Southwest Portland in Motion strategy, modeled off the very successful East Portland in Motion project. So that the Southwest Portland in Motion active transportation strategy would ensure that we use limited resources to quickly develop networks that get Portlanders in Southwest where they need to go. And finally, Portland's Freight Advisory Committee strongly recommended 2 projects to support the efficient movement of goods: the Rivergate Lombard ITS project and the North Going to Swan Island Freight project. Both of these projects use state-of-the-art signal management and efficient roadway design to ensure these areas continue to support Portland's economic development strategies. And I'd like to bring up Dan Bauer and Mark Lear to provide some elaboration. But actually, first I want to find out, Representative Jessica Vega Peterson's chief of staff was here and wanted to testify on these items. Marina, you are still here. That's right. Dan and Mark, stay, because there's room for 3. But Marina, you want to come up and offer your comments?
Good morning, Mayor Hales, commissioners. For the record, my name is Marina Orcutt, and I am Representative Vega Peterson's chief of staff. She's in Salem today for legislative days. So I am here to offer testimony on behalf of State Representative Jessica Vega Peterson. She represents a large part of the city of Portland east of I-205. Representative Vega Peterson would like to offer her support for the allocation of the $9 million coming from the Regional Economic Opportunity Funds for the East Portland in Motion Access to Employment and Education Project. As some of you know, Representative Vega Peterson has 2 young children. This summer, she and her husband decided to get some bike trailers and travel south to the Springwater Corridor. Her house is located right by David Douglas High School. So the route that they were going to take is a potential future site for one of these greenways that we're talking about. The route that they have to take is south, and so they had to cross Division, Powell, and Holgate. And as they were riding along with their 2 young kids, they realized just how dangerous this area is for bike riders and pedestrians each day as they cross these lanes of traffic with cars going upwards of 50 miles an hour. East Portland represents almost 1/4 of the city's population. It has some of the fastest growing neighborhoods in the city. With a once rural environment, the rapid population growth has been bearing some extra weight on the existing infrastructure. With funding like projects like this, we are on our way to making it safer for East Portland and East Portland families. Representative Vega Peterson would like to thank you for the opportunity to comment today. A lot of work has been done in the East Portland community in identifying this project as being important. And she would like to thank you, Commissioner Novick and Mayor Hales, for your continued partnership and work towards East Portland. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Marina, and thank the representative for her support.
Good. My name's
Mark. Take it away.
All right. I'm Dan Bauer. I manage the Active Transportation Division. And for the sake of today's conversation, I've been coordinating the submittal of grants for federal funds through both the state and through Metro. And so what we're talking about today is a process for nominating projects for federal funding through Metro. Just last week, Commissioner Novick had the pleasure of sitting on a committee to allocate federal funds to the state process, the STIP. So there's a lot of different projects going on right now, a lot of different public testimony going on. So there's room for confusion.